You are listening to This Hong Kong Life, a podcast by Kelly Support Group to empower the youths of Hong Kong. Welcome to Season 8.
When you look into a mirror, you see a reflection of ourselves, an image who we are at the moment that we're looking at it.
But any physics student can tell that a mirrored image is only a virtual image. Is it truly who we are, or merely a representation of what we are?
We're the hosts of this season, Ryan
and William.
The theme of this season is
Raw Reflections.
Together, we'll explore the idea of self-reflection and how it can help us to gain a deeper understanding of ourselves.
Each episode, we'll share our own personal stories, methods, or struggles in cultivating self-awareness. Or we'll invite a guest to share their own journey of self-discovery.
Are you ready to dive in?
Let's start to challenge presumptions and do some
raw reflections.
Welcome back to a new episode. Hi everyone, do you know that the 10th of September is the World Suicide Prevention Day? Today we have Lewis, the Youth Services Officer for the Mental Health and Wellbeing Team at Kelly with us.
Welcome Lewis, would you mind sharing a bit more about your day-to-day and the things that you encounter in your job?
Hi both. It's wonderful to be here. I'm glad to be here to talk about this kind of stuff. So my name is Lewis. I studied at the University of Stirling for psychology, and for the past 2.5 years, I have been working with Kelly. So primarily, the mental health and wellness team is here to provide youth with the skills and the confidence that they need to take care of themselves and the people around them as well. So you can see that at the heart of Kelly, we are very concerned with giving youth everything that they need to succeed and also, you know, have that confidence to just be aware of what's going on with themselves and others as well. So you mentioned previously that the 10th is World Suicide Prevention Awareness Day as well. So to start off, this can be maybe a little daunting to talk about something that is as serious as suicide. Maybe especially for a society like Hong Kong, where we talk about mental health a lot, but there are also a lot of things that are causing us stress, whether that is school or work or our relationships. So stress is something that affects all of us at different times. You can't really avoid it, but you might be able to see that. As time goes on and when stress gets to be too much, you may need to turn to someone next to you or have a conversation about it. So to start off, just to begin talking about this topic, two recent surveys have revealed that 17 to 19% of youth respondents in these studies have had suicidal thoughts at some point. And one of the surveys also identified that around 8% of them have actually made an attempt to take their own life. So this has been considered to be the second leading cause of death among 15 to 29 year olds. And that's definitely a concern. That is something that does worry us a lot. And we do find as well from this study that there was an increase in youth suicide in 2021 compared to 2020. So why am I bringing these things up? Because this can be quite surprising or maybe even quite sad to hear. Because this year for Kelly, we are aiming to reintroduce the One Is Too Many campaign. And the point of it, the heart of it, is that there is an urgency. There is an urgency to act now and prevent youth suicide. Because at the heart of it, youth suicide is preventable. And as part of what Kelly wants to do, we want to give you confidence. We want to give you how to be able to do this and to give concrete advice to people who want to support youth, maybe even based on real life situations that you might run into. So I suppose I can start off with asking a question of my own. So you've both been to secondary school. You have both experienced this big thing called stress. So how would you say it's impacted the two of you?
I think for me, the main source of stress came from academics, because in my high school, especially if you are studying for DSE, it's a highly, highly competitive environment. Everyone around you goes to tutorial classes after school, and they practice past papers almost every day in the classroom. And studying in such an environment really gives you the stress, because you know that if you don't study today, the guy next to you may surpass you in certain subjects by a few marks, and that may already be, he may get into a subject better than yours. So that is a very, very heavy source of stress for me. And to be honest, I've had some kind of thoughts about suicide because of the stress. And at that time, I thought that was the only cause of the stress. I don't know. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, so I have some similar experience with William as well. I think we have all gone through some stress because of the academic. And as a person that is really close to suicide, meaning not because that I want to suicide, but I have a sort of like special role amongst my friends because I'm a good listener to them. So a lot of times, a lot of my friends, when they have suicide thoughts or when they're upset, they will find me. And a lot of times, suicide doesn't come from one particular reason, or they're sad not because of one particular reason. They come from a lot of reasons. And some reasons would be past traumas. I have a lot of friends that face family abuse or family separation between their parents, or even suffering from bullying. I myself suffer from bullying as well, or different relationship breakdowns amongst your friends. Some people doesn't like you, you know. There are so many things that causes you to feel sad. And as a listener, I've heard a lot of people that voice out their upset and their worries. So I think this is some cause of suicide. And also, I believe one of the things that make the situation worse, and which I myself am very fortunate to help with the situation, is isolation. A lot of times when a lot of my friends are facing different problems, they would talk to me. But I can see that a lot of other people, when they are facing those kind of problems, they will keep to themselves. They will have sort of like a stigma to not tell others and trying to keep it as a secret. And that leads it to become worse and worse. William, do you have some similar situations when you are facing those kind of stress? Would you prefer to tell to others, or you keep it as an isolation thing?
Because as I've just mentioned before, I've had those kind of suicidal thoughts before. And when I was experiencing them, I prefer not to tell anyone, because it's kind of a bad thing to tell other people about, right? But I guess that's where the mental services from Kelly comes in, right? Lewis, do you have any case studies or experience that you've encountered before that are relevant?
First off, I want to mention that hearing you two share is quite eye-opening, but I would also say it's not very surprising at all. So we have touched the lives of a lot of you through our work, regardless of which team our people come from. But there is always that idea that as youth, when you are still trying to figure yourself out, when you're still trying to work out what is it that you like, who do you want to surround yourself with, what do you want to do with yourself when you're done with school, or even at that current moment when you're studying, these things can be very confusing, and these things can cause anxiety at times as well. So it's not surprising to hear that academics is quite a big source of this stress, but also there can be other life factors dependent on the person that can contribute to this as well. So you mentioned before that you have had suicidal thoughts. And I want to emphasize to the audience as well that having suicidal thoughts is not abnormal at all. I can guarantee that many people, perhaps everyone at some point in their lives, has thought about suicide in some form. But the distinction here is that you can think about it, but when you start to perhaps have intentions toward it, or when you start to plan for it in some way, that is definitely a time for you to think about sharing, or think about the people around you that you may feel confident in speaking to about such a subject. So isolation is also something that was brought up previously by Ryan as well, I think. And when I was previously volunteering in the UK for a mental health text line, many times I worked night shift. Sometimes that's just the kind of person that I am. But very frequently there would be a huge spike in demand for our services starting from midnight. So around 1 or 2 a.m. when people are in darkness or the people around them are sleeping, when they don't have someone next to them, or maybe when they're alone with their thoughts, this is the time when they start to feel the need to speak to someone, or they feel, I can't really be doing this on my own, I need someone with me at this moment, and that is why they reach out. So I would agree for sure, isolation in one way or another is something that contributes to this feeling, as we've seen from the COVID pandemic as well, where suicide numbers did indeed increase during that period in 2021. There was an increase because people simply could not be with the people that they want to be next to. They felt maybe they couldn't share what was going on with them, or I think maybe specifically for Asian society, they feel that the people around them have enough to deal with already. They don't want to be a burden to other people, and they don't want to contribute to that feeling. So they opt to take one for the team, keep it in, try to deal with it on their own, because the idea is, well, everyone else is also dealing with it. If everyone else is in the same situation, then I shouldn't say anything. And this applies to academics as well. If everyone is going to be taking the same exam, why should I be honest about how I feel about it? Why should I tell someone I'm struggling if everyone is struggling in the same way, but I feel like I am having difficulties? So in a way, that makes me the odd one out. Therefore, I shouldn't say anything. And that's true, but not necessarily, you know, everyone can feel like that, but that's not something that we want to encourage. I think everyone in this room right now agrees that talking about these kinds of things is so much better than to try to face it yourself through whatever expectations are placed on you, or because you feel like you would be a burden on others if you were to be honest about that kind of thing.
It feels, it's kind of a stigma to talk to people about your mental burden, because everyone is experiencing the same thing, and talking about it just makes you appear to be weak and troublesome. That's at least how I feel about it. But I think it takes time for you to actually build up the courage to open up to talk to people. So I'm just wondering, are there any ways before talking to others, are there any ways for us to help ourselves first? And then we can better communicate why exactly we're sad and what situations are we facing. And then we can seek a better help from professionals or friends, and they can better help us in some way.
I mean, before that, I want to thank you both for sharing about these things, because it's not always easy. But I also want to bring up a theme that might be developing right now, which is the idea of isolation and loneliness. The idea that you, you know, each man is an island, you can't really reach out to others, or you, because you don't have people around you, that you may start to develop these thoughts, or you may start to develop obstacles in your mental health that's making it hard for you to get the things that you need to do done, or to even find time for yourself to enjoy. So to step back just a tiny bit, it's not always that people who are feeling lonely and isolated will start to contemplate suicide in some way. But we do know that there is a link. Again, in terms of cultural differences in many Asian countries, people don't seek help as much straight up. They don't talk about it as much, or through the stigma that William mentioned previously, it's more difficult to open up these topics. But this is something that the media starts to perpetuate an idea of as well. Another study from the ones I talked about previously, it talked about how 40% of suicides actually reveal some kind of an intention beforehand. They communicate about this to friends, to relatives, to doctors, and they don't always have it taken seriously. So why am I bringing this up? I'm talking about this because the media may be perpetuating an idea that suicides can happen suddenly, or that they happen for no reason, or that they just, it's a shock to everyone. And this perpetuates the idea that we simply can't do anything to stop it, or that it happens and it affects people and we have no way of preventing it or doing something about it. We want to take away from this that the what we're talking about now and the One Is Too Many campaign as a whole, we are individually empowered and also as a community to be able to help others to open up, to talk about these things. We are in an exclusive position to care for our friends and to prompt them to talk about what's going on with them and to ask them what might be making them feel this way. So what Ryan was saying before, when you can feel almost that your friend is starting to act different, or maybe you're noticing some changes, that is one of the ways in which you can start to tell that maybe your friend is not doing so well. We don't have to say that they're immediately contemplating suicide just from that, but we can say that as a friend's intuition, we know something is wrong in some way and that we can do something about it. So from some of my own experiences, whether it's from youth sharing their stories with me or with Kelly, or some of my previous volunteering work as well, the idea that they are able to speak to someone about this and to open up and to honestly talk is definitely a huge part of how to begin to act now to be able to combat this current issue we're talking about. So looking for the signs, as Ryan said, is definitely important. So changes in life habits, energy levels, what they say or how they think, it can indicate that there is something that is going on. And in response to that, we always advocate to act with kindness. So what do you usually do with your friends? You hang out with them. You do things with them. You suggest things that you'd like to do with them. And that shouldn't change now, because maybe they're looking for a situation when they can talk to you about it. So when you find the time to say, do you want to go out for a drink, or do you want to go do something, play video games together, those things are opportunities for them to slowly open up to you in some way. And if they don't, that's fine, because you have done something to show to them that you're aware that there is a change. You know that there might be something going on and you are concerned and you want to be able to be there for them in some way. Another thing to talk about would be non-judgment. This can be a very difficult thing to practice because, especially with some of our peer support programs as well, this is something that we push for, to be non-judgmental. But what does that mean? Because when you are being non-judgmental, it's the idea that you don't let your own beliefs and values get in the way of how you react to someone or how you just act with them in general. And this isn't easy when you are faced with a friend who may be sharing with you that there's something going on with them, or they may tell you that they have been thinking about suicide lately, or not even that, different kind of language to say, for example, I don't really get the point of being here anymore. Or I feel like I'm just so tired all the time. I don't really want to do this anymore. And that kind of language. As a friend, when you are so concerned for them and you want the best for them, it can feel in a way that you don't really know what to do, because you don't want to lose this friend you have. And you don't like to see them looking like this or acting like this. So non-judgment is the idea that you can put that aside for a second and to try to really connect with them on what they're saying. So this doesn't mean that you fully agree with everything they say all the time, but it's the idea that you're giving them the stage for a moment to talk honestly about themselves. I think we've all had a conversation when the person across from you has their facial features change in response to something that you say, and it's a sensitive topic you're talking about, and suddenly you feel, I don't really want to talk about this anymore. Or maybe they react in a way that makes you think, I'm not that comfortable telling you something like this. And mental health is a sensitive topic, and something like suicide is also a sensitive topic. And it can be hard to practice this non-judgment, but doing your best to just accept them for what they are currently telling you, accept them for what they're expressing to you, that can go a very long way, I think.
You know, when people come up with a joke or something that is contemplating their life or death situation, oh, this professor is driving me crazy, I'm gonna kill myself because of it. But at the end, it usually is something serious. And when I face those kind of situations, I'm trying to listen without judgment. Another thing that I would do is I won't try to give advice, but instead I will use questions to guide them. Because in a way, when I'm speaking, when I'm talking with these kind of matters, I want my friends to just listen, shut up and listen and hear what I have to say. Lewis, do you think this is a good approach?
I think that's actually a very appropriate way of dealing with it. Because oftentimes when our friends have issues, our first instinct might be to try to give them advice or to tell them how to solve this problem. Because we don't like seeing our friends in these situations, so the fastest way would be to find a way to solve it somehow or to take the problem away. But in many cases when people are experiencing difficulties with their mental health or their contemplating suicide in some way, there can be many different factors at work here, and it could be something that's causing them quite serious emotional pain. And something like that is not so easily solved with just a sentence or just one solution. So usually to offer them an ear, to let them know that they can talk to you about it, or just to, as Ryan just said, to guide them through the conversation but let them be the master of their own experience, is the best way to help them to open up and just talk about what is going on. Because you don't have to know the specifics of the situation. You don't have to solve this problem, and you don't have to offer solutions. And the big thing here is it might not just be one conversation that can solve everything. You're not aiming to help them get through all of this and solve their emotional pain, whatever it is, and to make the problem go away in a single chat, just sitting down and being able to stand up, feeling so much more energized and happy and everything. It can take time. And a lot of what can help with this is just to let them talk about what is going on, because you don't know what it is to be like them. For you, a single assignment can be something that's quite easy. Maybe it's a subject that you're already strong at and you don't have much trouble with. So when someone else starts to have difficulties with it, maybe you feel, well, maybe I can help you with that. Or do you need something from me? How can I be there for you? That can usually mean so much more than to just say something like, well, I found it easy. I don't really know what the issue is. Or maybe you're thinking about it too much. It was such a simple thing for me to do. So combining all these things that the three of us have talked about, it's the idea that we are letting them talk first, we are listening non-judgmentally, and we don't jump to giving advice to be able to solve the problem. No matter how you feel seeing your friend in distress or seeing that they have a problem, something like this can be more than what a single conversation can solve. And so sitting down and being a good listener can be just the thing that they need.
I echo with what Lewis just said all about listening. One time I was bullied and literally I fell to the ground and a few of my friends jumped on top of me, which is a very humiliating thing that I've experienced. The first time I talk about this story to my mom, I feel very upset. But view it like a past experience and an experience that I've been through. As I relive the experience more and more, as I talk about it more and more, I started to normalize the experience and accept that it happened to me and actually view it with a more positive life. So before I was like, oh, I was so upset that people bullied me. But then I kind of shift to a perspective where, you know, actually it's a blessing in disguise, and people bullied me, it gives me motivation to keep fit and work out. And at the end, it turns out it is a very good motivation for me to go work out. So I would say being listened, you would live your own story a lot more times. And eventually, as the time goes on, you will view your experience, past traumas, stress as a positive thing. For example, when you're experiencing a lot of academic pressure, at first you would say it is a very big problem. But as you talk to your friends, your family more and more and more, then you will view it as a positive light. As William just said, it pushes you to work harder and work harder. So I think being listened, you're trying to change this perspective and to see things differently. Lewis, do you think this kind of situation makes sense?
First off, I want to thank you for sharing about that, because it's a unique experience, but it's also something that I'm sure other people, other youths all across the world, no matter what nationality or what age it is, will have experienced in some form. And sometimes that pressure or that stress that they feel doesn't come from bullying and it comes from somewhere else, but it might still affect them all the same. And I would say the thing I agree with the most from what you've shared very generously is the idea that when you're given space to talk about it, and as you talk about it more, you may start to feel more comfortable with it. And while I wouldn't say you can turn it into a more positive thing every time, the idea that you can recognize it affected you and it did happen to you without feeling like it changes the way that you think about yourself now. The idea that you can accept that what happened to you affected you negatively, or it made you feel quite bad, or perhaps even it gave you contemplations of suicide. The idea that with the right support and with people around you who will listen to you, you can move past that. Academic stress is just one of several different things that can happen. And I'm sure there's many youth who feel that there's so much stress on them and they have no idea what they're supposed to do. They don't see a way out, or maybe even that they've tried so many other things and they can never get past this. But I can offer one assurance, which is that these things are always going to be temporary. The way that you feel now about whatever stress it is that you have is temporary. It can feel bad now, but there is always a point in the future where it is going to get better, where you do find people who will listen to you. No matter where it is that you find them, there is a way for you to get out of it. And there are many people out there who are willing to listen to you share, who can listen to you without judgment, without putting their own ideas on you, and accept you for who you are. And when all that is done with, you can take them by the hand and walk to a place that helps you begin to solve how you feel. The idea that you can just sit down with someone, or you can take time to do what you like. These small things that we may take for granted in our lives that can actually help to reduce stress quite a lot, or start to change the way that we feel. So even though it can feel in this moment that it's hopeless, that you have no idea what you're supposed to do, that there's no one that you can turn to, I think I can promise, and I think my two hosts can promise as well, that there is absolutely someone that you can turn to in that moment, or something that you can do. Whether it is to just get a good night's rest and reflect on it with a different mindset, or to just decide at that moment that you can think of someone that you want to tell this to, whatever it is that you are feeling. So to briefly go back to the One Is Too Many campaign, that is the point of what it is that Kelly is currently working towards. We want everyone to feel like they can act now to change this statistic that I presented at the beginning of this episode. It can feel insurmountable. And from the way that some people speak of suicide sometimes, it can feel like there is nothing that you can do to change it, and that it is always going to happen. But we are setting out to prove that that's not going to be true. There are things that people can do, whether or not they are professionals, whether or not they have experience or training in this field. What we just talked about is the idea that being a good friend can be just enough for someone to feel that there are other options available, or that there is still something that they can do to change how they feel, or begin to set on a journey of recovery even. So no matter what it is that you're dealing with, no matter what role you play in a person's life, if you are the listener instead of it happening to you, everyone has their own part that they can play. in getting someone to open up and talk honestly about what's going on with them, and to also remove the stigma around talking about your own mental health. Because mental health is something that we all have, and it's something that we deserve to talk about. And I don't think anyone can allow us to say that it's not as important as other things, or that we always have to prioritize work or school or other things beyond just asking ourselves, how am I feeling today? Can I keep going on in this way? Or is there someone that I can speak to about this? Can I keep going on in this way? Or is there something I should do to treat myself, to be kind to my body or to my mind, or just to illustrate that there are other things to life than work or school or whatever other stresses that are happening. I can take the time to sit down and appreciate what I have and reflect on what I can do to make myself feel better. So I think a useful question to ask would be, after both of you have generously talked about what's happened to you or what experiences you've had, what does the recovery part of that look like? Where are you now in a place where if you feel like you have stress or you feel like you can't get stuff done, what is it that you do to put yourself in a more positive mindset or to help yourself feel better?
I think apart from talking to my friends about my problems, I also have a habit of writing my own journal whenever I feel sad about certain things in life. Because whenever something that triggers my emotion happens, I'll always get sort of fleeting thoughts in my head that this is not going to work out, this is going to be bad, I'm going to look so bad in front of other people. And all these fleeting thoughts in my head are actually causing me a lot of troubles. And the way that I deal with, like, just clear my head out of these negative self-talk is just to write things down. I write down why exactly I feel this way. For example, if I screwed up a certain test, I will feel like that, oh, I can't get into a good uni, I can't get a good major. And then I'll start writing down, why exactly do I think that I can't get into a good uni because I screwed up this test? Is it a reasonable thought? Is it, or is it simply just exaggerated emotions just driving me to think in a very irrational way? After I write down everything, I either will tell my friends or my parents about how I feel, or I'll just proceed with my day, find my habit, find a meaning in life, and then I'll just go on with my day. Usually this doesn't happen, this doesn't solve the problem immediately. After writing my stuff down, I'm still somewhat affected by this emotion, but as Louis just mentioned, it takes time. As I write about it more, talk about it more, it will just gradually become less of a problem. Instead of something that is affecting me right now, it will become something that happened before in the past that has affected but not affecting me right now.
I totally echo with what William just said, and I also have a habit of writing journals after William taught me the benefits of writing a journal. And recently I was a bit upset, and one day I just opened a document and I just ranted. I just type for like 1,000 words in like an hour, and it just works because I have no idea what I'm writing, but it's like ranting to a friend, but the friend is a cold computer. It doesn't work as well as a friend, but at the same time you can access it every time and every day. So I would rant and just write, why me? Why is this happening to me? I'm feeling so upset. I would just keep on expressing my negative thoughts. But then after writing it, I would look back and I would see that, oh, I was so upset 1 hour ago. It's kind of funny in a way that after letting it all out, it's just funny to look back and see how I was 1 hour ago. So I would say that ranting and just letting it all out in a way, for example, writing a journal or speaking to friends, can be a way to go. And another way that I would do is trying to develop a habit or a hobby that would distract me. Because I think William taught me this actually, is that the reason why you are so upset is because of isolation, because you have just so few problems in your life. For example, you just have academic, you just have your relationships, you just have those 5 friends. So whenever that one friend is mad at you, it becomes a big deal because 20% of your friendship would be gone because of that friend. But then if you have 100 friends, you have so many things going on, that one problem would not be that significant. So what I would do now or before when I was upset, I would just focus on a lot more things. Like for me, I'm an extrovert. I love going to events. So I would just register like 10 events and just go to them and to recharge my energy. And after those 10 events, I will feel like a new person and I will completely forgot my old negative thoughts. So I don't know if that is something good to do, Lewis, is to trying to expand my social circle or to write reflections and rant about it.
I think this is actually a situation in which you don't have to ask me whether or not it's the right answer, because we each have our own way of dealing with negative emotions. I think this just proves that all of us have some point in our lives when we have to deal with something very unpleasant or something that makes us feel angry, frustrated, just sad, jealous, no matter what it is. And these things are a part of life, but it's also kind of a journey of discovery to find out what works for you. Many people like to write a journal. Many people also try to write a journal and find that they have no idea how it's going to help them and it doesn't work. So they try yoga instead. Other people find that yoga is too difficult, so they walk their dog. Other people don't have a dog, so they play with their cat. It doesn't matter what works for other people because you are your own person. Maybe there are certain things that are amazing for you to do, and you don't know what those things are until you try or until a friend introduces them to you. And I think this really segues to a good final point here, which is as good of a job as you may be doing caring for other people, listening to them, being there for them as much as you can, and hearing them out non-judgmentally, you have to take care of yourself before anything else. It's important to be a good friend to others and to listen to them, know what's going on with them, but you can't do any of those things well if you're not thinking about yourself at the same time. Maybe even before thinking of other people. You can't take care of others very well if you're in a situation where you're not getting your own things done, or you're not eating, sleeping, drinking at the right times. And these things are important. And I wouldn't consider it selfish to think of yourself first before you think of others in this case. So before you set off on your journey of being someone who others can rely on and acting now, before you step out of the door, just consider, what is it that I need today? What do I need to do to get it together? What does my psyche need for me to be able to step out of the door and get myself ready for whatever it is I have to do, school, work, whatever it is? And what can I do to just make myself feel better? Do I like to dance alone? Do I like to eat a specific kind of food? Do I like spending time with my pets? These are questions that we have to ask as well when we are trying to act now and we're trying to be the one that others can rely on. So I want to thank the both of you for having me on. It's been wonderful to be able to talk to you about this and to also talk a little bit about the current campaign as well. So in addition to the current tips that we have discussed as a trio today, there's going to be a lot more in store for the One Is Too Many website that is going to come up later as well. If you would like to get much more involved in the One Is Too Many campaign, pledging will give you access to a host of different benefits, including exclusive content that you can find on our website, and as well as some physical benefits for those who agree to share the physical address, including a little badge to show that you have pledged to act now to stop youth suicide.
This is the end of the episode. Thank you for listening. This Hong Kong Life is an initiative of Kelly Support Group, a youth organization empowering young people to reach their full potential in Hong Kong.
If you like this show, please subscribe to get news of our latest episodes. If you have any ideas for This Hong Kong Life, reach out to us by Instagram DM at kellysupportgrp or drop us a note at contact@kelly.org. Stay tuned and see you next time. Bye!